Okay, tonight, Parshas Vayakel, it is Pekudei also, but we'll take a look at Parshas Vayakel, an idea by Rabbi Alex Israel. So we probably did a little bit of this a lot of years ago in Rabbi Riskin's name, but I didn't read the article over from Rabbi Riskin to see how exact it is, but I think there will be some similarities. So the kior, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, the kior, right? The laver, right? I don't really know what that means, but it's like a giant vat that like serves as a sink to wash the hands of the Kohanim and the Levim in the Mishkan. And it's interesting because the kior is by itself, right? Like if you read Truma Tetzaveh Kitisa V'Yakel Pekudei, five very long parshios. So Truma Tetzaveh has the kelim, and then Vayakel Pekudei has a repeat of the kelim, and then right smack at the beginning, almost the beginning of Kitisa, the beginning for the Machzis HaShekel, and then afterwards we're told about Vasita Kior Nechosha, which we're about to learn now. And the question is, why is it that it's by itself?
It's Nechoshes.
Why does it come after the Machzis HaShekel?
It's like, which one doesn't fit? This one doesn't.
Right, so in general, Kitisa doesn't make sense. Like, if you're going from Truma Tetzaveh to Vayakel Pekudei, like, put it all together, it's the same thing. Why do you break for it? So again, I think at one point we discussed the possibility that the reason the Egel is in between is almost to say like there's version one and version two of the Mishkan, and Chet Egel sort of like changes what its purpose was. Okay, so that, but the Kior by itself is still a little bit weird. So I don't remember which of the Mefarshim I saw this in, but I did wonder on Parshas Kitisa, at least this year. I might have done it in the past, but it like hit me this year. And I think one of the Mefarshim says that the Kior is unique in the sense that it's not really one of the Kelim, meaning it doesn't directly do anything in the Mishkan, but you can't go into the Mishkan and you can't do anything in the Mishkan without it. Meaning the Aron has a purpose. It holds the Aron HaEdus, it holds whatever, fine. The Shulchan, the Menorah, the respective Mizbeachs, same thing. But when it comes to the Kior, it doesn't, it's like, I guess you would call it like a, it's like a Hechsher Keli, as opposed to like a Keli itself. Okay.
Is it considered part of the Avoda, the washing of the hands and feet?
Is it, I don't know, meaning I think from like a...
It's certainly listed on Yom Kippur as part of the Avoda. I don't know about the regular Avoda.
The mikvah is...
Right, no, so that, right, so the...
No, both.
No, it is, both. Right, so the question, it's meaning it's part of the process. I guess the truth is that you can't say, by the Avodas Yom Kippur, I guess you would have to say...
Part of the preparatory of the Kohen for the process.
Like he changed his clothing and he washed his hands and feet.
Right. I mean, you could make the argument that the mikvah is part of the avoda, but once you go into the I'm not saying this is true, but once you go into the mikvah, then you're mechayev yourself to wash your hands, and that's why it is.
Yeah, but I mean, generally speaking, the average Kohen.
Right, on a regular day, meaning like the Kohen had to, like if the Kohen, if he urinate, every time you urinated, you had to go to the kior. And every time you defecated, you had to go to the kior and the mikvah.
Are you walking in the morning?
Yeah, you had to do that, but we don't consider, like the first thing that we consider as part of the daily avoda in the Beis HaMikdash was Trumas HaDeshen. But presumably, before they did the Trumas HaDeshen, the Kohanim had to wash.
The equivalent is now, it's like, right, every people wash their hands before davening.
Right, so it's not part of davening, but you can't daven without it. So that's one reason why it's by itself. But I don't know why I was bothered more this year than ever before about this question, but I didn't find very much, but I think it's a...
You're more aware of hand-washing.
Yes, that is very true. Yeah, okay. So anyway, whatever, that's the kior. So I want to take a look at the kior tonight and try to understand what it's all about. So Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor v'asita kior nechoshet v'chanon nechoshet l'rach tzav v'natata oto ben ol moed uvein ha-mezbeach v'natata sham ha-mayim. So they made this kior out of copper, and its base was copper, and it was meant in order to wash, and they put it in the Ohel Moed between the Ohel Moed and the Mizbeach, and there was water in there. So it does get good real estate, right? Meaning, like, it's not like it's put by the door and the outside. Meaning, like, from, like, the picture that you would imagine, if you had to design the Mishkan based on what we see of the Kior, like, you would put it by
the front door.
The front door. Meaning, like, you walk into Shul, you don't see the Aron Kodesh right away. You see the sink and the coat room. And then you go into the Shul. You would almost imagine it the same way, but no, it's like, really, like, it's got a good prime place between the Ohel Moed and between the Mizbeach.
Actually, if I wanted to go on the Mizbeach, I had to go past the Mizbeach and then go back to the Mizbeach.
So it's a little weird. V'rachatzu Aaron uvanav amenoti et hem et rogleihem. And Aaron and his sons would wash their hands and feet with it at the same time. It was like right hand, right foot together, left hand, left foot together, which is really hard. I used to try to show my students how to do it. It was easier in my first couple of years of teaching. But it's like a real, like, circus act. But I guess, like, they got good at it, so it was no big deal.
So before you described it as a big giant vat, which I have to admit my ignorance about all these, Caleb, I always pictured it as a small basin where you could just kind of dip your foot in, as opposed to a big giant.
I think it's both. In the pictures I've ever seen, the center is the vat, and then there was like a reverse skirt basin around it.
Oh,
because the water was in the vat holding the level.
Right, meaning it's like it's like a sink, except that they didn't have plumbing.
Water.
So you opened up the dude, right? That's what it was called. And when you, or the dad, I think it's a dude. And then when you did that, like, the water came out, and then you shut it, and then, you know, you're like, I don't know, it's like this, and then like that.
It's like at the Kotel. You got the sink with the 8 stations around, and everyone's got a little
faucet.
30 years.
Oh, that's what it's like now.
So if you look at pictures of the Mishkan one was smaller, Henry. Eventually, in the Beis HaMikdash, I think by Bayit Sheni, like, it was expanded, I think, from two taps to 12.
Oh.
So, like, there were a lot of people using it, or they needed more, whatever, for it to be used. But they would, every day or so, they would put more water in there. In Bayit Sheni, they installed, I don't know what you would call it, but like some sort of like mechanical wheel that would keep the water moving. And by doing that, the water didn't become pusle overnight. And then, like, you know, it just was like for the sake of the water carriers, like, you didn't have to, like, if you filled it up, you could leave it for a few days, as opposed to you filled it up and the day is over and there's half a thing left and you have to spill it all out. But
so
it,
if the water's not moving, it's puzzle.
After a certain amount of time. Yeah, which I don't understand. I mean, I'm not going to even pretend I understand. Why?
Right.
Right. It's like the matz, it's like the dough of, like, Pesach, right? Like, if you, it's not really 18 minutes, meaning as long as you work that dough, it could be 2 or 3 hours. Now, we're machmir just in case, but so long as you're working that dough, it's supposedly scientifically incapable of becoming chametz. The water also, as long as it's moving, it's considered kosher water. But if it stops, like, that's it, you're done. So bevoam al ol moed yirchatzu mayim lo yamutu. When they come into the ol moed, they will wash they'll wash with water and they won't die. O b'gishtam ol zneach l'sharet l'aktiri shel Hashem. Or similarly, if they want to come to the Mizbeach to bring sacrifices to God. They'll wash their hands and feet and they won't die.
Is this Misa Mamish or is this Karis?
I think it's Karis. I don't think, like, they're like, all right, Furman, you didn't do it. Boom. But I don't think by anything in the Mikdash, if you did anything that was a violation, they killed you. But God kills you, right?
Except bringing a foreign fire, that'll get you killed.
By God.
Right. So I don't know if God is going to do that if you don't wash your hands, but the person will die.
His lightning strikes. You know. God.
So, so this is the instruction to build the mission, to build the kior. And then we have one pasuk in Vayakel, because Vayakel is the not only the instructions, but in some events, it's actually the building and the completion. So Vayaseth the kior nechoshet, vet kano nechoshet. B'marot ha'atzovot asher tzavu petach ol moed. They made the kior out of copper, and its basin was copper. B'marot ha'atzovot asher tzavu, we're going to leave those four words out for a sec, petach ol moed, right outside the ol moed. Now, Vayaseth the kior nechoshet v'kano nechoshet, petach ol moed, that all makes sense. Right, because we were told in Pasuk Yud Chet, Vasita Kior Nechoshet, Vechanu Nechoshet L'Rachtza, V'natato Oto, Bin Ol Moed, V'n Mizbeach. Right? So if Kitisa had the instructions for us, and this is the construction, then this is the construction done right. Right? It's we see it. But what? Why do we add in B'marot HaTzovot Asher Tzavu? And what does that even mean? So Marot are mirrors. Marot hatzovot asher tzavu. So those three words are the words that are going to like give us trouble, right? But what happened was they took mirrors. I guess the mirrors were made of copper, right? And they took those mirrors and they made it into a kior. So from what I understand, a mirror is basically what? It's a
piece of metal.
Right.
Well,
right.
Back in the day, it was polished metal. That's all it was.
Yeah, there was no glass.
There was no glass.
Right. But if not, it's just like there's something, you need something dense behind it so that it's cool.
No.
You say like nowadays, if you take
use a spoon.
Yeah, it's glass.
Yeah, right.
Or a knife.
Right. So they had, right. So they had all these mirrors and they took them together and maybe even, one of the pictures even makes it look like can still see the original form of them, meaning like they it's not
circular,
the, right? Like they didn't just melt down the metal and turn it into whatever, but they made it into like, you know, that it was clear where it came from. So what are these mirrors? So Rashi says, "Benod Yisrael hayu bi adan marot sheroot bahen kishehin mit kashot." Jewish girls have mirrors so that they can see what they look like when they make themselves up. And to their credit, they did not hold back bringing these as a present to the Mishkan, which is a beautiful contrast to the men at Chet HaEgel, right? This is their most cherished possession, and they give it up. And the men grab the gold from the women. So Vayamo Eis Moshe Mehen. But Moshe was disgusted by it. Because they were meant for the Yetzirah. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Kabel, I want you to take them. Why? Ki he'elu chavivin alai min hakol. These are the most precious to me. Right. So let's stop for a second and ask a couple questions on this pasuk. We just need, I felt before we dived into this pasuk, we at least have to understand like what is going on here. So we're talking about these mirrors that the women gave. So there's a lot of stuff that was given to the Mishkan. Do we know who gave the gold? The only thing that we know who gave it is here, right? Because it specifically says there was a group of women that gave these mirrors. And the stones and the Nesim, that's true. Okay, so I guess we could ask probably the same question by both, but by the Nesim already, the Nesim give like, you know, a present, they give more than just the stones, there are other presents that they give that we look and say those are like given on behalf of like...
That was the whole point, that's all they had left to give because they were waiting for everybody
else. Right, but we also like the Chanukah Samishkan that each, you know, each Nasi gave their present with the stuff. Like I could wrap my head around that and say like the leaders got together and gave this special gift. But like this is not the only medal that the women gave. The women gave right? It's a pasuk. It's actually in this week's parasha, and I think it's back in Truma, maybe. Agil v'chumaz, like it gives us a couple different things, right? So like bracelets and another one, and like the kuma. Yeah, thanks. I'm pretty sure I learned it this morning. So maybe it's in Pekudei. I don't know, I have to remember. Yeah. Yeah, well, so that's, there are the stones for, right, that are given in the, for the Watchman, for the Choshen.
Not where I described it, but
so the water came out of the spigot.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it poured down on their feet. They didn't.
And yes, right. So the other pictures that I've seen had no circular
space. Were they standing in it, or they? That's what
they could have put their foot and hand in it as the spigot came open. Yeah. So it's pouring on both their hand and their foot. But it was inside, as opposed to on the floor, on the
right, so that makes it look like it just goes onto the floor.
Correct.
Right. That's how I always thought it was.
Yeah, because then the water's coming.
Yeah, it's really like threw me for a loop when he was like,
"There's
a big basin, whatever."
Gotta go to the other book and see what the story is there.
That went off a book.
See, that is the most authentic. We've been using that almost since Moshe Rabbeinu's time. I think I had a teacher that showed me for the first time that I was pretty sure had met Moshe Rabbeinu. I thought I saw it this morning. That's all I learned this morning. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. There's a bunch of different stones that are mentioned and a bunch of different, not stones, pieces of jewelry that are mentioned. And like one of them is like a stone that Rashi says it covered up the woman's private parts. Right? So like, yeah, so like nobody says who gave that, right? But those were like also like she was willing to give up that. Nobody cares about that. Why is it here by the Marot HaTzovot that A, we're told who the donors are, which is not the norm in the Mishkan, which is also not the norm for Jewish like philanthropic giving, right? There is usually a wall that has all the names, and we don't have any of that. And yet these women are singled out. So why don't we mention them? And why do we really care about the source of the donation? Does it really matter for this item? And who are these women? Where do they come from? And the last question is, how do we view these women? Is it a positive thing or is it a negative thing? Those are the four questions I want to ask on that one pasuk. So Rashi says to us that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was conflicted. When he saw these mirrors and they were offered, he could not really accept it. It didn't sit well with him. There just was something that appeared wrong about it. And then God says to him, no, you should take them. Because Chaviv and Alay min Akol, of all the donations, they're the most important to me. And ironically, at least on the metals and the precious, you know, whatevers, it's probably the least valuable. And yet it's number one. So Rashi continues, Al yedeihem hamidu hanashim tzva'ot rabot b'mitzrayim. Now that's a very, Rashi very nicely sticks that in there. Al yedeihem hamidu hanashim tzva'ot. What Rashi's doing here, and I'll be honest, I never caught that. But Rabbi Israel points out that what Rashi is doing is he's explaining, what does it mean by marot hatzovot? Like, marot, I get it. That's a word for a mirror. If you look in Rashi, Rashi even gives like the belashon laz. He translates marot, and the word is like something that sounds very much like mirror. But what are tzovot? So Rashi says that because of these mirrors, the women put up or created tzvaot. They created hosts, rabot, many hosts, b'mitzayim. Meaning it's that b'marot, with these mirrors, hatzovot, that they created the Jewish people with. So that needs a little bit of explaining. What does that mean? And I'll be honest, I also, like, I've told this medrash. Okay, I made a PG. G, really G. But I didn't remember it exactly this way. Kishayu baleim yegeim bavoda parech, when the men were exhausted from work, and it should be noted, by the way, it's not that the women weren't working. The women were just as exhausted also, but when the men were exhausted from work, they would go out. When the men were out there in the fields working, the women would come out to the fields, feed them, and give them to drink. Take the mirrors. And each woman would see her and her husband in the mirror. And would then arouse him by talking about how she's more beautiful than him. And then the men would be aroused to the women, and they would have relations in the field. And then they would have children. Obviously, when it says they would give birth there, it doesn't mean like immediately, like there was 9 months.
But the sham is actually the fields, according to it, or it's at least some of the...
Right. I think there are midrashim that they gave birth in the fields, which also, because they gave birth probably while they were working themselves. It wasn't like you got like, there was, forget paternity leave back then, which is, you know, a newfound phenomenon. They didn't have maternity leave there. Like, so the day of, I'm due today. Taskmaster says, oh, give birth here and keep working. So, but that's amazing. They would come during the man's lunch break, start up with him, and then end up having kids. Shenemar tachar tapuach or articha, my favorite book in Tanakh. Shira Shirim, right? Under the apple tree, Orar Ticha, we awakened. So Vizeshin Amar b'marot atzovo v'nasek yor mehem shehu lasum shalom ben ish lishto. So these mirrors were the ones that built the Jewish people, and they're the ones that make peace between husband and wife. Lashkot mimayim shebetocho l'mishakine labala v'nistera. That they use this water for the mesota, for a woman that was suspected of adultery. But teidalacha shehei marot mamash. You should know they're really mirrors. So Rabbi Israel does a beautiful job of connecting this medrash. And again, I think he like asks the question, not necessarily outright, but is this medrash really like 100% accurate? Meaning like, was it like all of a sudden, because that's not rated PG, right? Not even PG-13. Like all of a sudden, it's like, you know, all the men are on break. Right? Get a half hour, whatever it is, to like, you know, stop building the pyramids. And all of a sudden, all the men go missing. And thankfully, there's tall reeds. And the men are out there with their wives in the fields. It's a little weird.
They're collecting straw. They're out in the field collecting straw. Straw is tall and can be...
Right, but the image of, let's just say thousands.
Yeah.
Not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of men. Like, it sounds like Woodstock, right? Like, not Shibud Mitzrayim. Like, it would be like, I think, a very sacrilegious, like, image to take Woodstock and Auschwitz and mix them together. And yet that's, I think, what the Medrash is doing, right? Just a little bit.
The story that's why we have Moshe. Because she went out to the fields.
Good. So Rabbi Israel points out that in this Medrash, there are echoes of the Medrash of Yocheved.
Right.
Which also is not in the Psukim. Right. The only thing we know in the Psukim is that he remarries. I don't know why. The Midrashim are filling in the blanks. But he says, that the question that the men asked, and it's not shocking that the men asked the question, not the women, is, how could you bring a kid into a world like this? Right? Like, I'm literally being like worked to death, and I'm gonna have another child? It doesn't make any sense. And Amram was the same way. He was like, this is crazy. Like, why would I do this to anybody? Like, let's just call it quits. And it's Miriam who points out the obvious to him. Like, but you're going, like, the Jewish people have to continue. Somehow, in the end, Rabos Machshavos Blevish, Ba'atzas Hashem Yitakum. God wants the Jewish people to somehow make it, and somehow we always do. The women stand up and say, you can bring a child into this world. And so they create the next generation. It's not the men, but it's the women. Okay, so that's Marot HaTzovot. So now let's take a look at the Ramban. So the Ramban, he says, B'Marot HaTzovot, B'Not Yisrael, I just found in the Ramban, the pasuk I was looking for. It's in the Ramban. I don't think it's in I don't think it was in anything I saw elsewhere today. But don't you saw how you began that marot? Sharo pahem kishem mikasho v'af otan lo ikvu v'yam oes moshe b'hem mipnei shasun yetzahara. Sounds familiar, right? It's Rashi, right? Amar lo kadosh baruch hu elu chavivim min hakol shal yedeihem hemidu hanashim tzos rabos v'mitzayim. This is Rashi's pshat. Lashon Rashi, right? The Ramban often does that. He quotes Rashi, and generally, when he quotes Rashi, he then disagrees. He says, the reason this medrash has to be out there is that the women's gifts were always taken. That the men came on the women, and they brought nose rings. I don't remember what a chach is. Maybe it's like a bracelet. Tabat rings v'kumas. The kumas kipimet rishol yoter nimas. The kumas is the most disgusting of all the pieces of jewelry. Aval shami tarva kol nedava. Right, but there, it's all like wiped into one gift. There was a lot of jewelry that came from precious metals. Boom, what were they? These were all the things. But in the end, Moshe didn't take all the kumazes, all the, I don't know, whatever you want to call them, like these, I guess like a chastity belt or something like that. And Moshe says, all right, we're going to make something in the Mishkan out of it. Ad shenemarlo came to Pia Gvura. But God tells him that he has to do that by these Marot HaTzovot. V'lo yadati eich yitparesh l'fi zeh asher tzavu petach ol moed. He says, I don't understand. How do you explain? I mean, I understand Marot, but what's asher tzavu petach ol moed? V'la yomar shevyu anashim nedavaha hi el ol moed, shekaru ol moed, v'atzmo kibel mehem al pia dibur, Kya ohel mishkan lo nasa adayin.
He's assuming certain punctuations are not there, or is there already moving the punctuation, because the way I think we are observing, the Pesach Omer
is really going to be a point. Okay, so let's just double check that. Lamed Chet Pasuk. Yeah, b'marot hatzovot asher tzavu petach ol moed. So you have a lot of commas there. So here he made the laver of copper and its base of copper, comma, from the mirrors of legions. There should be a comma. Who massed, comma, at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So who is that? Right, the tzovot, it's actually, that's describing the women, right? It's the bimarot, the mirrors, hatzovot, of the, I guess, of the tzovot. So those are the women who collected there.
The way Rashi described it, the Maror HaTzavot is the mirrors of the legions. Not of the women with their legions, the mirrors of the legions that were legionized, whatever, that were created.
Right, the problem I think that the Ramban is bringing up is that Rashi's reading is not a good is not an accurate reading. Meaning, like, because that's not Tzavot. That would be Marot Hatzavot, or Hatzivaot, right? So he says, I don't understand how you're going to read that. So now skip down to the third line, right after Unklus tier game, comma, Notim Dvarav L'Divrei Rabbi Avraham, right? The Ibn Ezra. He says, I'm nota towards the words of the Ibn Ezra. Shamar Shayu Anashim Ha'ela Uvdot Hashem. So he says that there were women that worshipped God, v'saru mitavot zeha'olam, and they decided to distance themselves, to separate from the world, v'natnu maroteyem nidava, and therefore they gave up their mirrors. Uvau b'chol yom v'yom petach ol moed l'hitpalel v'lishmoa divrei mitzvot. And then they would come every day to daven and to listen to divrei mitzvot. Now that's a very different picture than Rashi, right? Rashi says there were these women that went out with their husbands and had relations in the field.
Years earlier.
And they used these mirrors, meaning these mirrors were objects that were used for that act. That's one side. And then Ibn Ezra comes along and says, no. There were some women who felt that it was time to take a step back from the world. So what did they do? They gave up their mirrors, right, which is what would make them appealing and attractive, right? Like imagine, I mean, you know, we live in a society where there's like, everywhere you go, you see yourself. They lived in the desert, right? There was not even like the water that you could like, look, oh, whatever. Like they didn't have that, but they gave up their mirrors. So it's like the exact opposite. That's what he says.
It was
very good copper. And that's why there was no question that it was going to be used for this. And therefore they said, oh, we gotta do this, right? There's a need for our stuff, and we want to be closer to God, we're gonna give this up. And then he says, and that's why it makes perfect sense to associate this with the sota. Because the sota is the woman that represents the opposite of what they represent. So that's the Ibn Ezra. So Rashi and Ibn Ezra are really offering two very different approaches to how we should view sexuality. Rashi says that there's nothing wrong with that. You could elevate that act and make it holy. Meaning that the act in and of itself is something that's holy. Ibn Ezra, though, says, no. The reason why you have to do that is because you can't have children any other way. And so, therefore, pious people will look at it and say, it is only a means to an end. It's not an end into itself. And therefore, those, according to Ibn Ezra, those women are going to say, no, I don't need my mirror, right? Because that's not, it's just a means to an end. So whatever I have to do, I do, I'm done. But according to Rashi, the opposite, like you could take, the same way you could take the mirror and elevate it to chavivin for what it represents, the act itself can be an elevated act as well. So which one's right, Rashi or the Ibn Ezra? So Rabbi Yisrael says perhaps the answer is different for different people. and which is a really good answer.
They're both right. A mirror is what you see in it.
Okay.
Fits perfectly. It's whatever you, however you approach it, that's what you get out of it.
Okay.
So it could be either side.
Okay. So I think that his answer is diplomatic. You have to decide for yourself what you make of it. But I don't think that we should be all aspiring to be those women. Meaning, perhaps you could say that within the realm of people and the Jewish people, you're going to have most people are regular people, and they go about, and these are normal things. And the goal is to elevate that act, which I think Judaism does a good job of doing. There's so many pieces built into the world of halacha that we live in to ensure that. I guess there are some people who it is that way. They're on such a high spiritual plane. And, I think it's one of either Ben Azai or Ben Zoma, I forget which one, didn't get married. And they asked him, why didn't you get married? And his answer was because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. He said, I can't. I'm married to the Torah. I'm so involved in it that it's impossible any other way. So I want to flip back as we wrap up to an interesting question. The question is, what do we do with Shir HaShirim? Now, I said, on some level, it's my favorite book, but I've never really learned Shir HaShirim. The only thing I know about Shir HaShirim, which I've said way too many times, the Chabura, is that whatever Art Scroll translates it as, it is not a literal translation by any means of Shir HaShirim, which is fine, because Art Scroll definitely doesn't want some kid opening up the Art Scroll translation of Shir HaShirim and be like, holy cow, they don't teach me those words.
It's a very literal translation.
Yes. Well, who?
The Art Scroll.
Is a very...
Very, very literal translation. They'll literally translate the words on themselves, for the most part, don't bend it's what's behind. Like, this thing like...
No, they don't. They don't. Here, it's... What is that? It's... Say again? Really? I think they do. Here. I can never find. Okay, here we go. I think it's the Perek Chet. Here we go.
It's definitely the redacted version.
Yeah, here we go. Pasuk Chet. Perek Chet, Pasuk Chet. Achot lanu ktana. I have a little sister. V'shadayim ein la. Right? Mana sel achotena v'yom shudu rava. V'shadayim ein la. She has no breasts. That's what the... Because she's little. She's a little kid. Right? Pasuk Chet in English. Israel desires to cleave to us, the small and humble one. But her time of spiritual maturity has not come. Yeah, it's not a literal translation. And that's a relatively neutral pasuk in Shir HaShirim. There is much more racy psukim. So why is Shir HaShirim like that? So and what is meaning, is that what we're supposed to do to Shir HaShirim? Are we supposed to remove anything in it that sounds like that? So let's take a look at a Mishnah in Yadayim. So the Mishnah says, "Sefer Shnimchak Mishtayer Bo Shmona V'Chamesh Otiyok Parsha V'Ahibin Tzoharon Metamei Yadayim." When you touch a Sefer Torah, your hands become tamei, which is probably the reason why we don't touch the Sefer Torah, right? If there's something wrong with the Torah, we do it with a talis, not our hands. Most of us probably think, and this is a good reminder to me, that the reason why we don't touch it with our hands is because it's inappropriate. The Torah is kadosh. But actually, the Torah is metame your hands. The reason why that is, anybody know?
That's
good. So they were nervous. It's great. They were nervous that people would use a Sefer Torah as a place to store food. And then, it's a really different world, right? And then you'd store your food in the Sefer Torah, and what would happen? Mice would sense that there was food in there, and the mice would eat through the klaf to get to the food. So if they told you that your hands become tummy if you touch the Sefer Torah, it's such a pain in the neck. For us, if your hands become tummy and all you have to do is wash them with sink water, no big deal. But back then, this was a real avoda. So that's what they did to protect the Sefer Torah's, the Sifrei Torah, from being used to store things. So as long as there's 85 letters, it's metame yadayim, meaning like some of those fancy, you know, like the fancy klafs that people have made with like a parshas Haman or parshas Ketores that they hang up in like different places. That's metame yadayim in theory. Megillah shekata bashmona, bashmonim chamesh otiot ke parshas vayibin tsoa ha'aron metame yadayim. Same thing with the Megillah. Kol kisvei hakodesh metame yadayim. All the books of the Torah, of Tanakh, are metame yadayim. That's a good question. I mean, the truth is, we touch the Megillah, right? Because the Baal Kore with the Megillah, like, he's touching it. So I don't know. Like, I'm not saying this Mishnah is halacha l'maisa, and certainly I don't plan on going there that way. Shir Hashirim Kohelis metames yadayim. Shir Hashirim Kohelis are metame yadayim. Now, the fact that it has to say that means that, like, Shir Hashirim Kohelis and Esther, probably for the same like token. There are certain books that like raise like big questions. And like people have always wondered, like, how did they get a place in the canon? So Shir HaShirim was one of them. Like people read Shir HaShirim and were like, we're not feeling comfortable with this. It just doesn't seem right. And Kohelis also, because Kohelis is like a really like strange like book on some level. And Esther has its own questions, but they don't talk about that here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shir HaShirim Tami Sedayim Kohelis Machlokes. So Rabbi Yehuda says Shir HaShirim is Metame, Kohelis is a Machlokes. Rabbi Yossi Omer Kohelis Eino Metame Sedayim. So he says, no, Kohelis is not Metame your hands, for Shir HaShirim Machlokes. Shir HaShirim is Machlokes. And Rabbi Shimon Omer Kohelis Mekule Beit Shammai Umechumre Beis Hillel. So Rabbi Shimon says that Koheles is one of the kulas of Beis Shammai and one of the chumras of Beis Hillel. I don't know exactly what that means. Amr b'Shimon b'Nasai Mekubal Ani Mepishivim Ushnayim Zaken B'Yom Shav Shiva R'Blaz B'Nazariah B'Shiva. Shimon b'Nasai says, this is word that I got on the day that from 72 wise men on the day that Rabbi Elazar b'Nazariah became like the Rosh Hashiva and replaced Rabbi Gamliel. That you should know that Shir HaShirim and Kohelis are metame hands. So I'm Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says, Chas v'shalom. Lo nechlak adam yisal Shir HaShirim shlo tetame et yadayim. So Rabbi Kiva takes what Ben Azai says one step further and says, heaven forbid that there should be any question about Shir HaShirim that it's not metame your yadayim. For sure if you touch it, it is metame. She'ein kol ha'olam kulo kedai kiyom shenitam bo Shir HaShirim yisal. There is never a day more significant for the Jewish people than the day that Shir HaShirim is given to the Jews. She'kol ha'ktuvim kodesh. All of ksuvim. I'm not sure if this refers to like the chaf of Tanakh or all the kisvei ha'kodesh. But all ksuvim are kodesh, v'shir HaShirim kodesh kadashim. And Shir HaShirim is kodesh kadashim. So the question is, how could Shir HaShirim be kodesh hakadashim? You don't tell me it's kodesh like all the other books, fine. But how could it be that it's kodesh kadashim? It's such a highly sexual book with its content. And yet Rabbi Kiva says that it's kodesh hakadashim. Rabbi Israel says perhaps that really comes back to the machlokus of Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. And if we take Rashi's explanation, what God is telling the Jewish people, what God is telling Moshe is an unbelievable lesson. And that lesson is that the act is so holy and these women did it in such a way, against such odds, where they felt that we have no choice. We have to make it holy. And we have to ensure the future of the Jewish people. We have to recognize that, yes, Judaism created a lot of laws around sexuality to ensure that it was done in a proper way. But at the end of the day, we don't view it as something to shy away from, but we view it as something that is holy. And that's what separates us from other religions, that we don't believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is the ideal when he separates from his wife. Okay, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was such a unique person, but we don't say that's what to emulate. We said maybe that was Moshe Rabbeinu's special like circumstances. But for everybody else, God is saying, live life the right way, but infuse every action that we have with Kedusha. And if we do that, that creates myriads of people for the Jewish people in the future.